cooler than Math Club and almost as cool as Chess Club. The Fan Club. Log on to Sportsnet590.ca. The Fan. On demand.
The Jeff Blair Show on Sportsnet 590. The Fan. No, I'm not Jeff Blair. My name is George Russick alongside Jeff Samet. Jeff Blair will have Baseball Central at noon on Sportsnet 590. The Fan. He's also steering the primetime sports ship. But straight ahead on this show, Todd Lewis, who's a part of the broadcast for the Indy broadcast on Sportsnet. He'll join us, talk about the double your pleasure yesterday at the Honda Indy Toronto.
How'd you like that? Two races in one day.
I think if you're there to watch it, you're just cramming all in one day.
A long day. It's a nice day if you're a big racing fan. But I have family that went out on Saturday. They were very disappointed.
How frustrating is that?
Yeah.
Getting ready to watch some racing and the weather just didn't cooperate. I still don't know what happened to our friend of the show.
Ryan Hunter Ray?
No.
Isn't he
the Bachelor of Canada?
Oh, the Bachelor.
Is it Tim or Tom Wormels? I just forgot his name already.
Tim Wormels.
That's it.
Thursdays at 8 on City, the Bachelor of Canada.
This fall. Don't miss it. Because he had all these...
I don't know. I guess he came back on Sunday.
Did he?
I don't know.
I'm interested now.
Well, he wasn't in the race, so whatever.
Well, he was doing, you know, he was hobnobbing
Grand
on
Marshall
Saturday.
For
he was
race
the Grand
one.
Marshal. Well, did he?
Well, he doesn't lose his duties.
Did he have to extend his duties to Sunday? What if he was busy? What if he was handing out roses and making out with a lot of chicks?
It's fast cars.
That's what
cars.
The Bachelor does.
It's fast
Sam
cars. It. I'm sure that falls in line with having great-looking women hang around you and hang on your every word. So I one would think the two go hand in hand. So I'm sure. If he was busy on the Sunday, and he managed to come out anyway. I'm sure he did. But then again, I gave it absolutely no thought. So, but I thought you were talking about Ryan Hunter Ray.
No. And fantastic interview we had with
him. We had him on Friday night. He's great.
Check out sportsnet590.ca. Ryan Hunter Ray.
If it's still there.
If it's still there. Cody Franzen, Jeff, signs the avoid arbitration, the Leafs and Cody Franzen. And we heard that Cody wanted $4.2 million. The Leafs are offering somewhere just north of $2 million. And there was all this talk that they were going to meet in the middle. Lo and behold, Jeff, a one-year deal worth $3.3 million. Let me tell you this. Do you know who's now the second highest paid defenseman on the Toronto Maple Leafs?
Well, see, you can't ask me because I know.
Like, you can at least play along when I ask you these questions.
I'm not going to lie to the audience. This isn't a play. I know who's second.
It's Cody Franzen.
It's Cody Franzen.
Cody Franzen.
Someone's got to be second. Who's it going to be? Robidas?
I like that you call him Robidas.
I call him Robidas.
That's fine.
Yeah, that's what I call
him.
I'm
okay with that. Robidas. Forget Robidas. It's Robidas.
What the hell?
I'm on board with that.
We're going to buy him out in a couple of years anyway. What's the difference?
So now the Leafs have Phaneuf at $7 million, Cody Franzen at $3.3 million, Stefan Robidas at $3
million. Robidas.
Roman Polak at $2.75 million. They got Morgan Riley still on his rookie deal, just under
$900,000. $894,167. I've got his paycheck right here.
Correct. And Jake Gardner's still a restricted free agent. So I can't see Jake Gardner making more than Cody Franzen a season. So Cody Franzen to you reeks of the second highest paid defenseman on the Toronto Maple Leafs.
It's Phaneuf and then everybody else that's signed right now. I mean, obviously, Gardner signs.
And it seems every year that Cody Franzen just playing for another contract.
Franzen? Yeah. Well, he's got one year left on his deal.
And we're going to talk to a Sportsnet hockey analyst, Gord Stelic, in a moment. But to me, when you look at this entire Maple Leafs blue line as is, Morgan Riley, obviously the potential to be a number one blue liner stud for the Toronto Maple Leafs.
Mm-hmm.
Jake Gardner, you hope he grows into that second pair of guy who can help you out on the power play, hopefully gets more responsible in his own end, has a little more hockey sense. But this is a team that just is riddled with 5-6 defensemen.
Mm-hmm.
Robida, Polak. To me, Cody Franzen's a guy who plays on maybe your third pair and helps you a little bit on the power play, but $3.3 million
what he should be.
For Cody Franzen. And to me, that number just doesn't work with the team in the Maple Leafs, who we saw last season at the trade deadline as well, being cap strung, not be able to make a move, the Thomas Vanek trade, because they're up against the cap. To me, $3.3 million for a guy like Cody Franzen, it just doesn't seem to fit for me. They're desperate. They want to pay that much money to have Cody Franzen play on the blue line.
I also don't want the Leafs paying Dion Phaneuf $7 million. I don't want the Leafs paying Robidas $3 million. I don't want Palak making almost $3 million. I don't want any of that. I think they're all overpaid. But hey, if they can go out and get the money, go ahead. But no, they shouldn't be paid all that money. But then again, with Cody Franzen, you take him out of this lineup, it's not to say that he's irreplaceable.
Right.
But you're that much worse.
Are you, though?
Are the Leafs in a position where they can say, yeah, I don't want that guy? Are they really in that position? They haven't afforded themselves the opportunity to be in that position. Even with the addition of Robidas and substituting or getting a Palak in here for Gunnarsson. Even with all that, they're just not in that position.
Yeah, but wouldn't you like to see the Leafs give a younger blue liner a shot from the Marlies? Apparently, Petter Granberg's the guy who can make that leap potentially this season.
Let them have their shot in camp, and if it doesn't work out, then you've still got Cody Franzen. This is what we're going to do. We're just going to... You're basically handing a slot to one of these guys. That's what you're doing. It's not just giving them a shot. It's saying, hey, there's a job here. Someone's got to have it, so I guess it's going to be you. That's what you're doing without Cody Franzen. It's not to say I like the $3.3 million, but the Leafs don't have the depth where they can be picky, unfortunately.
He's the host of Leafs Nation pre- and post-game on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. He's also a Sportsnet hockey analyst. Gord Stellick joins us here on the Jeff Blair Show. Gord, thanks for jumping on this morning. We hear news that Cody Franzen signs a one-year deal worth $3.3 million. Does Cody Franzen to you sound like he should be the second highest paid blue liner on the Maple Leafs, Gord?
Well, hello, George and Jeff. And, you know, that's the problem. It's same when you hear Dion Phaneuf making that kind of money. Then you watch in the playoffs and you see Drew Doughty and Duncan Keith and other guys like that, and you think, shouldn't that be a number one defenseman? And should Cody Franzen be our second highest paid defenseman? That doesn't resonate well, but those are the facts. I mean, that's what the going rate is for both those guys, and that's why the Toronto Maple Leafs didn't make the playoffs last year and need to upgrade it, whether it's those kind of guys or other guys. I mean, that unfortunately is the reality, and that's what the market pays for a guy like Cody Franzen, whether you like it or not.
So $3.3 million, that's what you expected, given that he was asking for $4.2 million, but he had to have known that he was not going to get that, and the Leafs were countering with $2 million.
Yeah, and you should be unafraid, I think, both sides to go to salary arbitration. I mean, those old days of taking it personal and what have you, they've gone by the wayside. And I just think in this case, the key is to keep guys on short-term contracts. So a one-year deal, to me, you can't lose. And in this case, right now, Cody Franzen, he was the only right-handed shot, I know, as we've talked about ad nauseum. That won't be the case this year. And he's a funny animal to peg a bit. He can, among the league leaders or the league leader in hits and some other things, but there was a defensive overall breakdown by the D, but by the team, especially in that stretch drive, that was baffling and concerning, and hopefully it's something that can be remedied.
Gord, when I look at a guy like Cody Franzen, and I look at maybe some of the potential youngsters that can come up, and we hear the name Petter Granberg's a guy who could maybe step in there and finally make an impact with the Toronto Maple Leafs, wouldn't the Leafs be better served of maybe trying to dip into the farm system and give these guys, younger guys, a better shot than paying Cody Franzen $3.3 million? Because don't the Leafs know what they have in a guy like Cody Franzen now? Wouldn't it have been the worst thing in the world to walk away from an arbitration ruling on Cody Franzen?
That's arguable, George. I think if you were really a rebuilding team, which they can't go through this one more year, since it's been basically one playoff since 2004, so you can't pull the rebuilding crap anymore. So you can't weather that storm. So you probably will have a little bit of both. Last year, keep in mind, the D really didn't get hurt all that much. Usually you have a number of attrition due to injuries on the defensive front. That didn't happen for the Maple Leafs, and that's usually when guys get their chance from the Toronto Marlies. And so I think you could have a bit of both, that you've got Franzen there, you know what he is, but if one of the other guys can jump in and be a core D and you get the improvement, which you expect from Jake Gardner and Morgan Riley, that would be great. But the other part is, as you talk about the Marley D, they've got to be identified and developed properly so you don't see Anton Strahlman playing elsewhere and Jay Harrison playing elsewhere. I mean, these guys, particularly Strahlman, became decent NHL defensemen on other teams, and you developed them.
Gord Stellick on the Jeff Blair Show. That's Jeff. I'm George. Gord, if I'm Jake Gardner and I see this deal by Cody Franzen, am I rubbing my hands together saying I'm going to cash in now with Dave Nonis and the Leafs?
Well, I think you just rub your hands together anyway about being the kind of prospect that Jake Gardner is. I know restricted free agent. He's kind of a poor man's P.K. Subban. So let's make it clear, I'm not comparing him to P.K. Subban at all right now. But as far as the best young defenseman, maybe Riley is too, but you've got two of those young guys that they're going to get decent coin. They're going to get raises, and that's always been a bit of the problem. When the CBA first came out in 2004, it was thought the second contracts would just be an incremental step, and you get the big money after 7 years when you were eligible for free agency. So that's been the problem. Guys are getting decent coin second time around, and Jake Gardner, whether you have a coach that at times, Randy Carlyle, is reluctant to play him or doesn't like the way he gambles, he's going to make good coin. But hopefully he can keep progressing.
Gord, how much of an impact do you think new Leafs assistant coach Peter Horchek is going to have on Cody Franzen on the blue line, given that they know each other back in their Nashville days?
Well, Dave Ferris won a Stanley Cup with Randy Carlyle as an assistant coach. And, of course, he had Pronger and Niedermeyer and guys like that. So I'm still big on Dave Farish. I know he's not a coach anymore. I like Peter Horchek a lot. I don't know how much we try to read into the connections about things where they've been before. It could be a positive. He's got a good kind of personality that way. I hope there's a personality on the team that really more so can have that kind of effect on David Clarkson up front, kind of like Peter DeBoer had as head coach in New Jersey. So I think quite often we're grasping at straws when you hope an assistant coach can make that kind of difference. But if it is something there, then that's a positive.
Gord, does this signing cut into that theory that, well, not the theory, but Dave Nonis saying that we want to have Morgan Riley and Jake Gardner play bigger, more important minutes for this team? Does this signing with Cody Franzen, does that affect that in any way?
Well, the guy that should answer that is Randy Carlyle. I would think that you should be playing those young guys more minutes. I think you should work with their mistakes as long as they continue to show growth and other elements, at all aspects of their game. But you need D. I mean, you need defensemen. Cody Franzen, to me, wasn't all that expendable. He's a decent NHL defenseman, and you need them. You just can't put a ton of young guys up there. But I also am an advocate of the other guys getting a chance to flex their wings and become more the leaders and get more ice time if they deserve it.
Brendan Shanahan addressing the media a couple of weeks ago, Gord, and he was talking about and addressing the fact that they didn't get maybe a lot of the free agents that one's fans or the media would have liked them to get. And he was talking about competition in camp and wanting to have some jobs open so that Marley's the young guys, they have something to compete for. They have something to strive for. Do you believe in that?
Well, Jeff, a couple of years ago, Brian Burke said that, and he said that's how Jake Gardner made the team in training camp. Contract-wise, it's a tough one to really put in place nowadays because guys, you've seen the exhibition games, they're brutal. They're brutal. I mean, guys come, they know they've got contracts of whatever, and aside from Clarkson getting a 10-game suspension because somebody goes after Phil Kessel, the games are brutal. Nobody's really fighting for jobs because it's not a reality anymore. So it's a nice concept. I don't know how it would play out, but if it's something to rattle a cage a little bit and a guy that wasn't expected makes the team and contributes, I'm all for it.
Gord, looking ahead now to James Reimer's arbitration hearing as well, is this going to be something very different than what we saw with Cody Franzen, or do the Maple Leafs really want James Reimer back to be the backup to Jonathan Bernier? Do you think it's just a different situation now with James Reimer coming up?
Well, I think they both accept it. If you have two goalies on the team right now, he certainly is one of your best two in the organization with McIntyre heading somewhere else. And I would think James Reimer would have to acknowledge that he's the backup this year. Whatever last year was, if he was dueling for the number one job with Bernier early on, that's not the case. They've got to give it to Jonathan Bernier and run with it. And in Reimer's case, I just think he's just been a quality guy and a great attitude. And the type of guy that could be a backup goaltender that doesn't make any kind of waves. Because I think he's got to understand that there weren't teams out there looking for him to be a number one goaltender like teams like Toronto, a few others were last summer with Jonathan Bernier when he was still with the Kings.
Gord Stellick of Sportsnet 590 and Sportsnet. Thank you, Gordo. It's a pleasure as always, my friend.
Thanks, Jeff. Thanks, George.
All right, Elliot Friedman's going to join us at 11 o'clock, so we'll get his thoughts on this as well.
I just don't see it. I don't understand why you're giving, and it's only a one-year deal, and I'm okay with the term of the contract. But again, it's all about salary cap management. And in this cap era, the Maple Leafs as a whole have not done very well in managing the salary cap. And if you need to make a move, because we all know the Leafs are desperate to make the Stanley Cup playoffs, this contract might be something that will handcuff you when you need to make a move around the trade deadline. To me, it's just you got to be cap smart, and the Maple Leafs just haven't.
Well,
and $3.3 million for Cody Franzen, to me, just doesn't work, Jeff, because potentially he could be a guy who could be fighting to stay on the ice, or if he has a great season, that's fine. The contract would be warranted. But there could be an instance here, Jeff, where this guy's fighting to stay out of the press box in this season. You just don't know. The consistency hasn't been there from Cody Franzen, and $3.3 million for me just seems a little steep from a guy that I don't know that you're going to get a lot out of this season.
I don't think he's untradeable, and certainly with a one-year deal,
right.
He's not. So I think you have that, and I don't think he'll be as bad as he's fighting to stay out of the press box. And that speaks to him. It also speaks to what you've got on this roster as far as blue liners are concerned.
I just hope they live up to the promise of when we heard Dave Nonis say that, yeah, we want Morgan Rielly and Jake Gardiner to play, you know, a bigger, more important role. And to me, that's kind of a little scary for a guy like Morgan Rielly, but especially Jake Gardiner. It's time for him to maybe take on a bigger role in this team. And it's going to be interesting to me the entire season now, that dynamic between him and Randy Carlyle. We've seen how Randy Carlyle even offers challenges to him in the media as well. We'll see if Jake Gardiner can respond and maybe live up to the guy that we think he can be with the Toronto Maple Leafs. Interesting times for the Leafs, but to me, when I look at that blue line, it's a lot of 5-6 pair of guys, Jeff, and really not a lot of what they need to compete legitimately for a playoff spot in the Eastern Conference.
You know, with Gardiner, I'm not going to suggest that I'm okay with him being one-dimensional, but if his presence on the team is because he adds something that the rest of the club doesn't, that he can move up the ice, he has a bit of offensive flair, and that's why he's on the club. And I say that also in that he's not a defensive liability. After all, he's a defenseman. I mean, you don't want anybody to be a defensive liability. So if he's not a defensive liability, if he can hold his own in front of the net, do what he needs to do on his own end, but why he's on the ice or why he's with this club, why he's in the mix, is because he can move the puck up the ice and he could be that offensive defenseman that, you know, is not around with the rest of the core defenseman of the Toronto Maple Leafs. If that's why he's there, I'd be fine with that. If that's all he becomes, I'd be fine with that. And I say that with a team that has Morgan Rielly, because I think Morgan Rielly is going to be more of that complete package.
It's about trust with Jake Gardiner and Randy Carlyle. We've seen a guy like Jay McClement play a ton of minutes when some Leaf fans are pulling their hair out. Why is this guy playing in every big situation? Well, because Randy Carlyle trusts him. And if Jake Gardiner can be that defenseman that eventually he can be trusted by Randy Carlyle, we'll see a bigger role for him on this Maple Leafs team. But I don't know if we're going to see that earlier on in the season, midway through the season, or even at all this year. It's just, to me, Jake Gardiner is such a big wild card on this Maple Leafs blue line. A guy whose name that he keeps constantly thrown around in trade rumors as well, with a guy like Nazem Kadri. I don't want to compare him to a guy like Brandon Morrow, because the injury issues are always there from Brandon Morrow, but just the wild card factor for the Maple Leafs. If Jake Gardiner can live up to that potential, look out. If you compare him with Morgan Rielly for the next few years, the Maple Leafs blue line certainly looks bright. But to me, just getting these guys constantly year in, year out, you're just spinning your wheels with all these 5-6 pair defensemen, and the Maple Leafs have an abundance of those guys.
Oh, they certainly do. One thing to throw into the mix with Jake Gardiner, and I don't necessarily know the answer to this, and I think only time will tell, and anybody does. Everybody can certainly have an opinion on it. But with Jake Gardiner, does he have the right head coach? Like, would Randy Carlyle welcome the style that I described out of Jake Gardner? Would he welcome that? Would he be okay with that?
But Jeff, you look at a guy like Randy Carlyle, Norris Trophy winning blue liner, long distinguished career, a Stanley Cup champion. Oh, and by the way, he coached guys like Scott Niedermeyer and Chris Pronger. Like, if this guy doesn't have enough pedigree to be a guy, to be a mentor, a guy who knows the position in the NHL, I don't know who the hell can maybe flip the switch on a guy like Jake Gardner to finally live up to that potential.
But has that happened yet? I mean,
no, it hasn't.
Carlyle is all that you described. Jake Gardner is what he is, as we described. Has he done that under Randy Carlyle's watch? He hasn't. And you look at Gardner now, Nazem Kadri in a different respect, James Reimer. Those were a few players that you thought maybe at one point would be the core moving forward for the Toronto Maple Leafs. And now, and I guess it happens when you bring in a new head coach, but under Randy Carlyle's tutelage, are these the guys you move forward with the Toronto Maple Leafs having Randy Carlyle as your head coach? Because it doesn't seem like Nazem Kadri has taken the next step. Jake Gardner hasn't. James Reimer, I'd be surprised if he comes back at all with the Toronto Maple Leafs, because I think he would want to jump ship over here for a starting job somewhere, but I'm not sure he's going to get that. But then eventually, I think James Reimer gets moved if the Toronto Maple Leafs can add some depth in goal, because they don't have that now with McIntyre gone. If they have some veteran depth in goal and they could substitute that for James Reimer, I think if they could, they would. There's obvious friction. And maybe they could put it aside, but there's been obvious friction between Reimer and Carlyle.
And well, it's funny that you mentioned that going into the offseason, that was made the relationship between James Reimer and Randy Carlyle is fractured. And the way he dealt with young players, especially a guy like Jake Gardner, it just didn't seem to work, and that Randy Carlyle is going to lose his job. Lo and behold, bam. Contract extension, and it seems like these guys are all going to be back playing for Randy Carlyle again. Did we overblow maybe the relationship or lack thereof between all these players?
It was on television.
But we did see it, but I guess they're going to have to coexist again. But
I don't think from either party, and I'm talking about Carlyle and Reimer, it's out of choice. They might just be out of necessity. Carlyle and the Leafs would need him, and Reimer needs the Leafs. I think it's more out of necessity, so let's make this thing work. But I don't think it's by choice. Look, we saw it in that HBO 24/7?
Yeah.
It was on Sportsnet. We saw it. When Reimer got the hook, he gave Carlyle the old stink eye. And it's apparently there has been friction beyond that one moment. You know, Curtis Joseph was speaking with the media. I believe Luke Fox had the story on Sportsnet.ca that Cujo was saying that he believes in James Reimer. You wouldn't want to see that relationship end. That, yeah, if there is friction between a head coach and a player, you know, all that goes away. You have a good game and all that goes away. Like, it very often can happen. It doesn't always happen, but that can happen. But I'm not sold on that happening with Reimer and the Leafs and Carlyle. I think if Reimer is back with the Toronto Maple Leafs, that it wouldn't surprise me at all that he gets dealt midway through the season. I could see that happening. But the market for goaltending isn't what it used to be.
No, and not value or free agency as well. It's just not there. It's 10:23 on the Jeff Blair Show. That's Jeff Sammet. My name is George Russick. Straight ahead on the show, Alan Bastable from SI to talk about Rory McIlroy's wire-to-wire win, but big sporting event over the weekend here in Toronto to talk about that. Todd Lewis, Sportsnet reporter. He was on site for the Honda Indy Toronto, joins us now on the Jeff Blair Show. Todd, thanks for doing this. Obviously, you had to wait around on Saturday. Was the double dip on Sunday worth what you went through on Saturday?
I'm still digesting all that went on over the weekend. I think it was an awesome weekend that will be referred back to a number of times as the history of the Toronto Indy goes forward, and we think back on great and memorable weekends for years to come. So, yeah, I think it was worth the wait to answer your question. It was the right call not to race on Saturday. Initially, I thought, you know what, maybe they should start these guys. Start them under yellow if they have to. Let them run a few laps and hopefully try and clear some of that water. But after talking to the drivers the next day especially, it seemed that I guess it was the right call. But we had just about all the drama you could ask for. And the doubleheader on Sunday, first time IndyCar's raced and had two points paying events since 1981 on the same day. Sebastian Bourdais led from the start almost in race number one, scored a great victory. And then in race number two, Mike Conway and his team make a great call to change to dry weather tires before anybody else does. Actually, they were the second team to do it. It worked out beautifully for them, and that team picks up their third win of the season. A smaller team with two drivers, Conway getting two wins, and Ed Carpenter picking up the other. It was all kinds of drama yesterday, and it was spectacular.
Well, given the conditions and the circumstances, Todd, is Bourdais' win a little bit more impressive than Conway's, because you actually got to see and be witness to and involved in seeing a race go on that track and then maybe having the foresight in race number two to win it?
It was great for Sebastian Bourdais to collect a victory, and it's impressive, and I'm anxious to see what happens here. Talking to him at the beginning of the year, you could just tell by his answers to questions and in the tone of his voice, we still have a little bit of work to do. We're still learning. It was a switch to the new team for him this year, and they still had some work to do. They've made improvements through the season, as you would expect, but this weekend they put it all together, qualifying on pole and then winning the race on Saturday. Now, if they can parlay that into more success at the end of this year, he's under contract with KV Racing next year, then maybe it leads to even bigger successes. But it was really something to watch that victory. And Conway, he's a road course guy and makes no bones about it. He said, it's time for dry tires. So the team went with it. They were comfortable and confident in his decision, and it worked out beautifully for them.
That was an advantage that they used the points leaders for the pole there in that second race?
I don't know that it was necessarily an advantage for them, but the points leaders didn't have the best day. Well, Will Power had an all right day in race number two yesterday, as he wound up on the podium. But that's just the way it worked out, in terms of that's why you have championship points, and it sometimes works to your advantage to be leading the championship, and you've earned that advantage by success earlier in the season.
How do you look at this weekend for Oakville's James Hinchcliffe? He finished eighth, his career best finish in Toronto, but some saying that he's just cursed on his home turf. What do you think?
I'm not one to believe in curses, although James has joked about it often, saying, well, maybe I should break a mirror and hold a black cat and walk under a ladder and all the rest of it to try and get rid of some of this bad luck. But I'm kind of wondering if whether it's just sort of his situation and circumstance. Being in Toronto, he was the busiest guy in the city last week. I mean, he was everywhere. He had so many appearances and commitments, and he is always so positive and so gracious about carrying through with them. And if it's possible, you wonder if they could just pare that back a little bit. It might help him in Toronto. But I'm also wondering a little bit about his situation with Andretti Autosport. They have an option on his services for next year that they have to pick up by a certain day. Is this the right set of circumstances for him? But then if you do look as a potential free agent outside to other opportunities, he's really closely associated and tied with Honda now, which may kind of restrict his mobility in terms of the IndyCar series. So you're kind of at the best Honda team right now, and it's a difficult set of circumstances for him. But no, I don't think he's cursed in Toronto. I think he's super frustrated more than anything.
Todd, what was the turnout here this weekend? Did the weather really affect what was going on or on Saturday? Or what was your sense? Is this race kind of getting back to what it was there in the late 80s and the early 90s?
I think there's always a base of really passionate, really enthusiastic. We're always coming to the Toronto event, no matter what the circumstances are. Fans in Toronto, and they deserve the biggest credit for this weekend. They were unbelievable to sit through that crazy rain delay on Saturday when you were just hoping and wishing for more information faster than it was coming out. And that's something that I think the series maybe needs to take a look at, is making announcements more frequently and getting more information as quick as they can to fans. But it would be wonderful to return to bigger crowds. Of course, that's what you always want. Maybe the biggest deterrent is all the construction in Toronto right now. I found that to be the most frustrating thing, being back in the city this weekend. But There's always a solid crowd. The volunteers do an incredible amount of work there. The staff at the Honda Indy Toronto also do a really terrific job. I mean, basically working the last week without sleep, and then having to react so quickly to the changing weather circumstances and trying to adjust the schedule overnight to squeeze in two full points paying races for IndyCar. They did a really good job. So yeah, I think they're in good shape. It'll be interesting to see what date they have next year. Of course, the Pan Am Games take over the CNE, so the date for the Toronto Indy is going to move up a few weeks, it looks like. Not sure exactly when yet, but it'll move up. But I still think they'll do well.
Todd Lewis covering the Honda Indy for Sportsnet, writing for Sportsnet.ca. Todd, great job. Thanks for this.
Pleasure, guys.
And again, if you're a fan there and you kind of came back for the Saturday morning, the Sunday morning race, kind of neat that they jam it all in one day. And again, I remember back in the day when it was the Molson Indy and how excitement, and hopefully that it's a good event once a year. And the racing fans, as you said, there is a hardcore set of racing fans in this city, which is kind of surprising to me that they're still around and people jam the Lakeshore to see open wheel racing. It's kind of neat to me.
It is. And what are you going to do?
It doesn't matter when you... Yeah,
and what do you want, right? If I'm a fan, I'm going out to this thing, and the weather gets in the way, what are you going to do? It's the elements.
And it doesn't hurt that you have a local star in James Hinchcliffe that you can pull, taking over the reins of guys like, you know, Paul Tracy and Scott Goodyear, guys you want to cheer for the Canadian side. Rory McIlroy, wire to wire at the Open Championship in Liverpool. Alan Bastable from SI will join us to talk about that and talk about why Tiger Woods is done. Okay, I'm just saying that, but... he sucked over the weekend. Alan Bastable straight ahead. This is the Jeff Blair Show. That's Jeff. I'm George. Sportsnet 590, The Fan. All right. It's the Jeff Blair Show on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. That's Jeff Sammet. My name is George Rustick. Straight ahead on the show at the top of the hour. NHL insider for Rogers. That's right, he is. Elliot Friedman.
Yeah, he is.
On Cody Franzen signing that one-year, $3.3 million deal with the Toronto Maple Leafs, avoiding salary arbitration. We heard that I wanted north of $4 million. The Maple Leafs were offering north of $2 million, and they met in the middle.
You knew that he was asking for that much, so he split the difference.
We'll get Elliot's thoughts on that, and maybe, you know, the whole James Reimer situation, too. He's the next one. His is in a week as well, and how is that going to shake out for the Toronto Maple Leafs? And can they really coexist? Can Jonathan Bernier and James Reimer coexist again this season? And I'm sure Bernier and Reimer get along, but it's more the Carlisle-Reimer relationship.
That's the thing. That's the relationship right there that we got to focus on.
Joining us now on the line, editor SI Golf Digest and Golf Magazine, Alan Bastable, joins us here on the Jeff Blair Show. Alan, thanks for doing this. Rory freaking McIlroy at the Open Championship, just obliterating the course there at Hoy Lake. Just talk about his performance and a guy, three majors by the age of 25. We always talk about Tiger Woods and Jack Nicklaus. Can Rory McIlroy challenge Jack record now?
Maybe a little premature to start comparing him to Jack Nicklaus. But, yeah, I mean, undoubtedly, you know, hugely impressive week. You know, I think a lot of people expected him to come out Sunday and do what he did at Congressional in Kiowa and go on to win by, you know, seven or eight strokes. Obviously, that didn't happen. I think he played maybe a little bit more conservatively, defensively, to protect the lead and just get the W, which is obviously what happened. So it was a little different style of golf than we saw from him in the first 3 days, but still hugely impressive.
Shot a 66 in round one, again in round two, a round in which this year he is ranked 181st. Do you feel that the second round was the hump that he had to get over?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I don't know. I know a lot was made of that, and it was definitely statistically very bizarre, but I think it was just a bit of an anomaly through the first part of this season. I mean, Rory did admit to that getting into his head a little bit, and you know, he's had moments like that in the past. He's not necessarily doesn't have Tiger's, I wouldn't say, mental toughness where nothing gets to him. But you know, he's very human and very emotional, and I think that's why he's such a popular player. I mean, people can really relate to him, and just very, very down to earth. So he's going to be a popular champion for years to come.
Alan, explain to me how a guy who's 5'9" weighs about 160. Can hit the golf ball 400 freaking yards. How does that happen?
It helps when you're playing on a links golf course where the ball just runs forever. I don't know. I mean, you need a physics expert to come on and explain how torque and club head speed and all that stuff contributes to huge drives. But he's a guy. I mean, a lot of guys are obviously following suit, but he's taken his physical fitness very seriously over the last. I would say he's gotten very serious about it just in the last 4 years, and clearly it's made a huge difference. I mean, he looks entirely different than he did when he came out on tour. So spending some time in the gym certainly has not hurt.
I know we talked about how many majors could this guy win, but looking at right now, and this is his third career major title, but do you believe that this is the starting point of an era that could very well be dominated by Rory McIlroy?
Yeah, sure. Anything's possible. But, you know, it's funny. I've been reading so much and hearing so much from people around the office about the new era. But as far as I could tell, people were declaring that when he won at Congressional. In fact, Sports Illustrated that week, the cover line was golf's new era when Rory won the U.S. Open. So, yeah. And that was 3 years ago. So, let's see how it goes. It's easy to sort of get all excited and overreact when a guy has a big week. I mean, think back to Pinehurst and Martin Kaymer blowing away the field. Everybody was ready to give him the claret jug. And what did he do? He went out and he did make the cut, but he almost finished dead last among guys who made the cut. So, Rory's, again, a little bit of a different animal than Tiger. I don't think he's going to be as dominant because if the first part of his career is any indication, he gets hot in spurts. Mm. He'll play great for 3 months, 4 months, and then maybe you won't hear from him for 3 or 4 months, unlike Tiger, who was there week in and week out, certainly at the big events. So, we'll see. I mean, he's certainly, you'd have to guess he's going to win a handful of more majors, but is he going to beat Jack's record? I don't know. I think it's way too early to start speculating.
Editor S.I. Golf, he also writes for Golf Magazine. Alan Bastable here on the Jeff Blair Show. That's Jeff. I'm George. Alan, you talk about that Martin Kaymer win at the U.S. Open, and clearly people lost interest. Did people lose interest in Rory's run at the Open Championship?
Yeah, in what sense? Just
the television ratings. Obviously, there were record low numbers for the U.S. Open.
Oh, God.
But yeah, Rory's a big enough name that people actually want to see him go wire to wire?
I think so. I mean, nobody contends with Tiger, and I think Phil would probably draw bigger ratings than McIlroy, certainly in the U.S. But, he is certainly in that small handful of players that can move the needle. I mean, it may really at this point be only those three guys. I know Adam Scott's sort of a nice looking guy and has a golf swing that we're all envious of, but I'm not sure he really moves the ratings needle. So you'd put those three guys, I think, in a class by themselves. I haven't seen the ratings for ESPN. Be curious to see how they fared. But the interesting thing, you probably read this, Tiger had ESPN3 had an all Tiger feed Thursday, Friday, and I assume it went into the weekend. So, it's pretty clear what Tiger does to ratings. Maybe someday we'll see an all Rory feed. I'm not sure.
Alan, why the hell did it take so long to have an all Tiger feed?
I'd ask the same question. If they had that feedback in his glory days, it would have done so well. But here's the thing: when Tiger's playing well, you basically see every Tiger shot anyway.
Right.
On the regular telecast. So I'm not sure how much of a market there is for having to see every single shot, especially if Tiger's shooting 76, do you really need to see every swing?
Yeah.
But I guess there is a huge appetite out there for him.
Ricky Fowler, with his third top five finish in a major this year, he certainly gained a lot of experience here. Do you believe his future is big?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, he's one of those guys we've been waiting to break out now. I mean, he was such a huge talent at Oklahoma State. Had a great Walker Cup or unbelievable amateur career. Probably hasn't gotten out of the gate like a lot of us expected with just one win so far in his career. But this seems to be a turning point for him this year with three top five finishes in the first three majors already this year. And working with Butch Harmon has obviously paid big dividends. I think they're trying to sort of simplify his swing a little bit. And Fowler is one of those guys, kind of like Graham McDowell, who very much rely on timing, and they get a little handsy with their swing from time to time, which is why he'll go through stretches where you don't really hear from him. But Harmon's tried to simplify that and make more of his try to get more of his body into the swing, so he's less relying on timing, and it seems to be to really working for him. So hard to imagine he'll go too much longer without picking up a major.
Alan, we saw Sergio Garcia contend there, had a great tournament as well. Here's a question for you. Career majors for Sergio Garcia, 0.5 over under.
Wow. You gotta give him one. Just you hope
the PGA
karma is on his side, and he'll. I mean, if eventually if he keeps hanging around, keeps finishing top five, he's gonna have to just back his way into one. You would think if he can do this for another 10 years, and particularly the British Open, that's one of those tournaments where you can win. You know, it's been proven time and time again. You can win in your 50s. You know, Tom Watson obviously almost won one at 60. So. If Sergio keeps showing up at the Open Championship, he's a great links player. You hope just for his sake. I mean, can you imagine Sergio Garcia, 80 years old, sitting around with his grandkids without a major title on his mantle? That would kind of just eat him up.
Looking ahead to the picks in September for the Ryder Cup, is Tiger amongst them? Because he feels that he should be playing in the Ryder Cup, but does team captain Tom Watson pick him?
Yeah, that's going to be probably the juiciest storyline over the next couple of months, seeing how that plays out. You know, the real issue with Tiger, so he's only got two more starts to try to get into the FedEx Cup playoffs, and that's Bridgestone and then the PGA. If he can't get enough points, and one of the great stats I saw this morning, Tom Watson actually has more FedEx Cup points than Tiger Woods does at the moment. So if Tiger doesn't qualify for those four events, then all of a sudden, Watson's in a position where, obviously, that means A, Tiger didn't play well in those two events and hasn't played well at all this year, and B, he's going to be sitting on the bench for 4 weeks, 5 weeks before the Ryder Cup, puts him in a really difficult spot. I mean, maybe in some ways it kind of would let Watson off the hook a little bit, because you could totally understand why he wouldn't pick Tiger. The more interesting scenario is if Tiger just sneaks into the playoffs, continues to play middling golf, then all of a sudden, what does Watson do? So, you know, he's said from the get-go, it's going to depend on Tiger's health and obviously how he's playing. But you never know what Tiger's health is, because he's never particularly candid about it, how he actually feels. So that's going to be a great story to watch over the next couple months.
Editor SI Golf, he also writes for Golf Magazine, Alan Bastable. Alan, thanks for doing this.
You bet. Enjoyed it.
Are you feeling Sergio Garcia for one major?
I like the way he put it. He's bound to back into one eventually. I love the way Alan put it. What about McIlroy rocking the pink?
I'm okay with that.
He looked good.
Listen, we all know why he won the major. He won the Open Championship. He got rid of Caroline Wozniacki,
who had a successful weekend herself with winning the East End Bowl Cup.
Yeah, and she beat Roberta Vinci in the final. And that's her, you know, oh, you won, I can win too, Rory. Come on. Best thing to happen to Rory McIlroy's career. Free of those shackles from Caroline Wozniacki.
He wants to just focus on his career.
But what Alan
obviously
said,
he's doing that.
What Alan said about the fitness regime, Caroline Wozniacki's responsible to get him on that fitness regime.
Mm.
So that relationship,
there
at least, it bears the fruit of him working out in the gym and to be a professional athlete. She has a lot to do with why he got into the gym in the first place.
McIlroy said something after the win that really resonated with me, and I love seeing this out of young people. He says that talking about golf, his passion for golf, what I think about when I wake up, or what I think about when I go to bed is golf. Paraphrasing, but that's basically what he said afterwards.
Right.
And I love seeing the passion in young people about what they do, and in this case, McIlroy with golf.
Well, I like when he also mentioned that some of the distractions off the course as well were maybe getting to him, and that he wants to completely focus on golf. We focus to the Maple Leafs as Cody Franzen signs a one-year, $3.3 million deal. We'll get the thoughts of NHL insider for Rogers, Elliot Friedman, straight ahead on the Jeff Blair Show. That's Jeff. I'm George. Sportsnet 590, The Fan.